Hey, this is Laura.
And Steven.
And this is our podcast, Midday Musings, where we take our lunch break to talk about the things that are on our mind. Today, we're doing a retrospective on the BioShock game series. So we're talking Atlas Shrugged, we're talking traditionalism, a little bit of Norse mythology vis-a-vis order versus chaos. It's fun. Let's get into it. Hello, Steven.
Hello.
What a pleasure it is to be spending this lunch break with you.
Yes.
How are you?
Well, I have no brain in my head. It is gone. It has left the building, but I'm going to sally forth anyway. I have
That's
no
okay.
thoughts.
Many living animals do not possess a brain, and I would argue they're the better for it.
Oh, you know what? That does make me feel better because I definitely don't have much of a brain in my head. But here I am, going to talk about some stuff. We're going to see what it is. We're going to find
Dude.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, dude. What's up, dude? What you got?
I have thoughts. You can tell me if you like these thoughts. I mean, I always think about BioShock.
Oh, yeah.
Like multiple times a week.
Good.
But earlier today, I said to someone, no gods or kings. And I was like, oh, I wonder how BioShock's doing. I wonder if it misses me.
No gods or kings, only man.
Dude, yeah. It's been what, like 15 years since the original BioShock dropped?
At least, yeah.
Yeah, and it still lives rent-free in my brain. Like, I find myself awake at night internally planning a BioShock theme park if one were to exist. And with the advent of the Last of Us series, I'm like, you know, this could be a series.
Mm-hmm.
And then the series could become a theme park. And then I could go to that theme park. And then life would be complete.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I would love that. I remember when you showed me the new Universal Park that's opening up in
2025.
In 2025 in Florida. And I thought, based on some of the architecture, is this a BioShock theme park? Holy cow, my world is about to explode. It's not, but it still looks really, really good. It's got like classic monsters themed.
Mm-hmm.
There's a How to Train Your Dragon themed park. There's, I think, an expanded Harry Potter world. It's just a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, the Ministry of Magic.
The Ministry of Magic. Just a lot of really good stuff. Not quite BioShock theme park, but they're expanding the theme park vision, and that's what I'm here for.
I feel like the BioShock theme park lives in the subconscious of every living human. I have no evidence to support this, but it is my fun little belief, and I think we're allowed to have fun little beliefs. But like earlier this year, I read a book called Our Wives Under the Sea, and it was like deep sea horror.
Oh, nice.
And I think one of the reasons I loved it so much, and like it's amazing, go read it. It's like deep sea horror, it's like body horror, it's like a really good love story. Like, get into it. I think the reason that I really was obsessed with it was because BioShock intellectually primed me to be utterly fascinated with the bottom of the sea.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I totally see that. And I mean, underwater horror is just a really good genre. Like,
if you
go back to the 90s, you have Sphere.
The Abyss. Yeah, sorry.
You have Sphere. You go back a little bit more recently to the 2020s, I think late 2000s or 2010s, and you have Underwater, which was also a very good underwater horror movie.
Yeah, I think like three people saw it, but I was one of those three and I was super into it.
Yeah, it's just when you're underwater, that far underwater, it's like you might as well be isolated on a different planet. You might as well be in outer space because number one, it is as dangerous. Number two, the deep sea is in a lot of ways is as foreign of an entity, as foreign of a location as deep space. We just don't know what lives down there.
I just finished up this Danish book called The Employees, and it takes place in a deep space area and like shenanigans and existential crises, and there are humanoids and humans and objects that come on board that cause a ruckus. But it has that quality that Sphere has, where there's just like a tapping unknownness that like taps against the psychology of everyone there and messes with you. And there's no escape. And there's a strangeness, but it's kind of like Earth. I love the like trapped horror / sci-fi narratives. I love things that are closed in, like small stories. Inescapability. And what do you do in your state of inescapability? How do you survive? How do you behave? And that's what BioShock gives you. Like, the whole city is leaking. There's a civil war. There are monsters. Like, there are rules that you don't know. And there's absolutely no regulation in this society. So it's just like, it is an infinity of fascinating possibility. And all of that possibility has like the edge of both malice and like the macabre. Because you're like, oh, this whole thing runs on dead bodies.
Yeah.
And supernatural medical experimentation. And also everything is art deco and therefore the most beautiful thing you've ever looked at.
Yeah.
The idea of just seeing neon lights underwater fills me with like a sense of the sublime. It's impossible, but it's beautiful and it's strange. And it fills you with this wonder that is not quite pleasant. I don't know. I'm into it.
And the thing that's fun is that in both Sphere and BioShock, the villain in the story is people, because in Sphere you have people who are, they're casting these wishes into this futuristic alien technology and it's fulfilling their wishes, but their deepest fears is what it actually is doing.
Yeah, it's like it'll give you whatever you want, whatever you think about, and people being people live in their anxieties.
Yeah, and so they summon their fears into existence and they all die. Spoiler alert for a 30-year-old movie. But BioShock.
No, but they don't die. That's Event Horizon, I think.
No. A lot of them die in Sphere.
I thought they wished the Sphere back. Guys, it's from the 1990s. If you think this is a spoiler, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, like a bunch of them die and then they wish the Sphere to go away and there's like two survivors.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
I remember that. It's like Dustin Hoffman and like one other person, probably very important lady actor that I can't remember. Sorry. But, and it's similar to BioShock in that way, because BioShock, again, it's people who did this through. They had this idealistic approach to creating this utopian society. They took all of the luminaries of their time and went underwater and made this underwater city and said, this will be a perfect utopia away from the world. And then it imploded upon itself.
Dude, no, it's like if Atlas Shrugged, instead of going to that weird little sky city that they went to, went deep underwater.
Yeah.
It's so Atlas Shrugged. And I love that about that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, like, there's a ton of direct references to Atlas Shrugged.
Oh, unquestionably. Yeah. Of course you're right. Because everyone knows that Andrew Ryan is just like Ayn Rand,
yeah,
but a boy with a mustache and a dapper cane.
Oh.
But no, that idea in Atlas Shrugged, it's like the engine of the world. Everyone who's super duper smart and industrious, they leave everyone else and go off into their little land to be amazing on their own. I like how Ken Levine takes that concept and he's like, okay, all you geniuses and divergent thinkers and artists, industry men, we go down to the bottom of the ocean. This is rapture, which is funny because they're rapturing down, but whatever. And they make hell.
Yeah, because I think it asks, BioShock asks the question, what happens when you take a bunch of luminaries and highly creative and highly intelligent people with a ton of resources, remove them from society completely, and completely remove any sort of limitations on what they do? And in this case, the answer is hell. They raise hell.
Yeah.
like the city falls apart.
It's so darkly beautiful,
yeah,
and like truly intellectually haunting. Just,
oh my,
like,
gosh, yeah.
Gorgeous. Gorgeous. I can't get enough of it. I think I've thought about it every single day this week.
Good. You should.
Yeah, and I don't think that's unusual. I think that it is always living in the back of my mind because it combines beauty, horror, and deep philosophical questions. Here's the thing about geniuses, right? They cannot toe a line.
No.
They cannot keep the lights on. They're too busy being geniuses and inventing that which does not exist. But you still need the things that do already exist.
Yeah.
Supply chains, keeping the lights on. Like, somebody has to get the food. Somebody has to clean. Somebody has to, like, do maintenance. And your geniuses are not interested in that.
No. No, they're not. And it shows that it becomes a huge problem. And they're hubris for thinking that they could run the city themselves without any sort of infrastructural thought to it. I mean, they had infrastructural thoughts, but it got all lost in their big bets and their blue sky ideas with no grounding. That was the problem. They had all of these blue sky ideas with no one to say, all right, look, they just needed a project manager to be like, or someone who had a very level head, like an auditor to go, look, that's cool. You want to do this, but here are the risks inherent with this. Here's how much this is going to cost. And here's how long your society will last if you do this. 5 years. If you reduce your ambitions by maybe 10%, it could last 50 to 100 years. don't do it, guys. Don't do it, they say. But no, they just wanted to get crazy and just build this world, this idealistic world without any sort of actual physical grounding.
Well, yeah.
That's the downfall.
Right? Like, what is man's intelligence without limitation?
Yeah.
I would say that it morphs into a monster. Limitation is one of the things that makes us human, safe, finite. So I remember this Danish behavioral study. They did it on babies. They're just like babies in a field. God bless the North Europeans. They're wild. So they put a bunch of babies in a field, just like an open field. And the babies were like, girl, let's hang out together. And they just like clustered together in this little clump. And then the researchers were like, okay, so we've got a ball of babies. Amazing. Interesting information. And then they put up fencing around the location. So they created an enclosure. And suddenly the babies would go to the very end of the enclosure.
Huh.
Suggesting that limitation actually allows us to extend ourselves.
Oh, interesting.
Creating a sort of magical circle of safety makes people behave like people. Limitlessness brings out our fears, makes us kind of cling to each other. Or I guess in the case of probably a genius, it makes you go so far afield, you start injecting people with Adam and making them into magic monsters.
Yeah.
Into splicers. I've always felt that like the reason geniuses aren't everyone is because genius needs society to support it. It needs like normalcy to allow it to thrive. A genius absent normal, grounded people who define boundaries is really just a maniac.
Yeah,
in my completely unexpert opinion. But there is so much value in the lines that we draw because at least for our own psychology, it makes the world make sense.
Mm.
It gives the world shape. And so that I guess that's my key takeaway from both Atlas Shrugged and BioShock, that some limitation is good for the human. It tethers us to reality.
I would totally agree. And the thing is, the geniuses and the people who keep the lights on, they actually really need each other because the people who keep the lights on are the ones that make sure that things don't fall apart, that things can stay consistent and steady and stable, as is important with the society. But the geniuses allow us to advance, to change, to evolve, to grow. But without the people to keep the lights on, it's all chaos. It's not tethered to any reality or any sort of grounding. So geniuses without grounders is all chaos. And grounders without genius is all stasis. And stasis without geniuses can't grow. So like, in order for us to continue the cycle of society, I really feel like we just need both of them. We really need both of them. And neither is better than the other. Like, they are an integral chain.
There's a perspective, at least in our society, that genius is so superior to non-genius, to like the actions of normal social beings. I think that's terribly asymmetrical thinking. It ignores how valuable a normal person is. Like, even just on the how interesting are people level, a normal person is so fascinating, and geniuses aren't that interesting. So in Norse mythology, their concept of the world is that like everything is chaos and man creates order. And that's what normal people do. They create order from like the raw chaos of nature. At least that's the perspective of Norse mythology. I think you could pretty well argue that there's some chaos in nature. So normal people create order, and order is invaluable. But then you have genius, which introduces that element of chaos, and chaos within a controlled, ordered environment will just benefit the environment because it will expand the limitations of that order.
Mm-hmm.
It will introduce something that is diluted enough by order that it can benefit the order by extending it. But chaos within chaos is simply chaos forever, I would argue.
Yeah, and that doesn't benefit anyone.
No, that'll make you itchy.
And I mean, on the other side, right, you've got, if you're just grounded for the sake of being grounded and that's all you are, and the world was only run by people who want to keep things the same, that's how the world stagnates and eventually decays, because it's got to keep up. It's got to keep up with the world, with the evolution of our ecosystem and the people around us and all of that. So it really needs an engine to keep it going, but it needs solid ground to put that engine on. And the grounding, they're the solid ground. They're the fuel. They're the things that help the engine run. the engine itself, I would say, is the geniuses. Like, they're complex and they're delicate and they can easily break down.
Oh, yeah, so fragile.
Yeah, but the geniuses can't run themselves. Like, you need the people, the grounding, the oil, the fuel to actually run the machine, to run whatever they build, because they don't know, they can't run it themselves. They need other people to do that.
My brother has a political analog to this. An interesting fact about us is that he falls on the conservative side of the political divide, and I fall on the liberal side of the political divide, and we have fun little conversations in which everyone is bettered. But his idea of the world is that both progressives and conservatives work for the combined benefit of the nation. So, you know, sometimes you need the forward momentum of progressivism, and sometimes you need the sort of staid orderly quality of conservatism. And we just go back and forth. And by pushing this line back and forth, you have forward progression that is smooth. I like that idea. I like that he thinks that. And I like that perspective of reality. It's quite measured. That is exactly what we're talking about here with order and chaos. The orderly qualities of society, or the orderly members of society, interact with the more chaotic members of society. And so we just grow and grow and grow. But it's a stable growth because it's grounded by those who would create order. And it creates some ascendancy in the people who introduce elements of chaos and dynamism. I think that's true of life. And I think that's kind of what the BioShock series is about, too, because, like, the first one, Rapture, is everyone's a genius, chaos. And then in BioShock Infinite, you have Columbia, which is extraordinarily orderly. It is traditionalism. It is conservatism explicitly, and a religious conservatism, too. And it shows you the dangers of both perspectives, of both philosophical approaches. And that's why Ken Levine is a genius, because he's not sitting here with an agenda. He's saying, this is the nature of reality as I see it. This is the nature of philosophical reality as I see it. Whether you have perfect freedom or perfect order, something malicious is available in these locations. And it's all because human nature is imperfect.
Yeah, it's like he totally is saying conservatism unbound is stagnation and liberalism unbound is chaos. And you know what? He and your brother are right in that sense. I think it's a balance that you need. You need both of them. Neither one is fully right all the time. There are situations where it makes sense to have a more liberal approach, and there's a situation where it makes sense to have a more conservative approach. And I love how Ken Levine really just takes the wind out of both of the sides. He's like, hey, look, here's what happens if you go all out into genius and chaos and all that. And here's what happens. You go all out into conservative groundedness. Like, they're both bad. So here we are. People are just people.
Yeah, it's
by themselves, unrestrained. They both produce bad results, is what I mean. Neither one of them are actually
people. Human beings aren't bad. But philosophies which live inside human beings can really do some wackadoodle things.
Yeah, that's true.
In fact, I noticed that human beings, the less ideological they are, the more what I would call virtuous they are, the more they behave with sense. It's ideologies that make us kind of crazy, in my opinion, because ideologies are hard and unyielding and not responsive to the environment they're in. They don't shift in response to events that you encounter. They're these hard ideas that produce hard results. And it's difficult for me personally to have an ideological viewpoint on anything. I find all of my beliefs have a kind of relativism related to what I'm encountering. And for me personally, that's a great way to live life. It's a vibe. I'm not filled with hatred or anxiety on a daily basis. So we're living. We're sliving.
Yeah.
And not a single splicer to be seen.
Right. That's what you want. You want no splicers to be seen. I mean, obviously, those of you who play BioShock, you know what we're talking about. They've consumed Adam in BioShock, and now they have magical superpowers, but also they're pretty freaking crazy, so it's a problem. But yeah, I love the BioShock series. As a 20-year-old in the army, I actually really connected with Atlas Shrugged and with Ayn Rand's writing. Oh man, I bought into it wholesale at 20. This was before it was adopted by any political groups. It was just out there. It was just good fiction that was out there.
Yeah.
But I remember reading it. It needed balance, and so I pulled back from it by a great deal. But I still love exploring those different philosophies that exist.
You know what? What's super duper funny?
Yeah.
When I read Atlas Shrugged, I was just like, dude, this reverse harem novel is so hot.
That's a
like
fair
the
point.
Philosophy just like bounced right off my brain, and I'm like, that's interesting.
I mean, Dagny Taggart.
John Galt sure talks a lot.
Dagny Taggart does have a lot of men who are after her, and she is a boss, isn't
she? Dude, she is amazing. Like, Dagny Taggart is like the girl boss. She is feminism made flesh. Yeah. And I love all of her suitors.
Right?
Like, I'm into it. I hope that Atlas Shrugged loses its political significance to people so that they can appreciate it as probably the best romance novel of the early 20th century.
You know, it really is. And that's what I was going to say. My perspective on it more now is that it's actually a really good romance novel. Like,
Dude, she's so good at writing romance.
Yeah. Yeah. And the way that she talks about romance, like, it's not what any person looks like. It's what they're doing. It's like... hard labor, hard dedicated labor, much like the protagonist in Perfect Days that we saw a couple days ago and talked about recently. It's the act of doing your work, not because anyone's watching, just doing it well and taking pride in your work that she found sexy in Atlas Shrugged. And all the protagonists, when they're falling in love with someone, it's because they're observing them work and they're observing them taking pride in their work that causes them to fall in love. And I think that's beautiful.
I think it's beautiful too. That's the reason that I fall in love with people. Like, people will ask me if I have a type and I'm like, not physically.
Hard and workers.
Not, yeah. I genuinely look for character. Yeah. I look for indications of character in people's actions and their physicality and their emotionality.
No, that's totally fair. Yeah. That's totally fair. That runs a lot deeper than some of the key indicators of, like, you know, what they're into or what they look like. You know, everyone looks about the same, really.
I mean, really, yeah. You got two eyes most of the time. You got a nose, you got a mouth most of the
time.
Your
carbon base, you know.
Yeah, like, we're 99.9% the same.
Yeah.
But you know what's hot? Souls.
Yeah.
Human souls.
What really makes people different is their values. And I love a hot value set. I am hot for a good value set. I'm
Dude,
just saying.
Me too. I'm into it.
Yeah, you are.
Well, this has been a lovely chat. Thank you so much for talking to me.
No, thank you for talking to me. I'll always want to talk about Atlas Shrugged. Always want to talk about BioShock because I love it. And that said, shall we give our listeners back their lunch break?
Yeah, have a great lunch break, guys.
All right, y'all. Have a good one. We'll catch you on the next one.
Bye.
Bye. This has been Steven.
And Laura.
Thanks for tuning into Midday Musings, the podcast where we talk about all the things on our mind. Be sure to follow us on Spotify and jump into the conversation in our polls and Q&As. We would love to hear from you. Catch you next lunch break.